What is up? Welcome to Canucks Talk today here on Sportsnet 650, your home of the Canucks. Jamie Dodd here. Thomas Drantz still on vacation this week. I am broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. And I've got a feeling you're going to want to get your submissions to the Dunbar Lumber text line in early. It's going to be a spicy show. Just have that sense today that it's going to be a spicy show, and certainly in the Dunbar Lumber text line. So send your thoughts in after last night's 6-1 shellacking that the Canucks took at the hands of the Winnipeg Jets. And there is so much to get into after that result. Last game of a 5-game road trip for the Canucks. And man, it was just another ugly blowout loss. The return of Philip Hronek did not matter at all in the end for the Vancouver Canucks, at least in his first game back in the lineup. And as I said, throw another ugly blowout loss on the pile of this season, which has already seen the Canucks take a bunch of ugly blowout losses. And before, just to set up the show a little bit here as well, of course, in just a couple of minutes, it is Wednesday, so I'll be joined by Don Taylor and Rick Dollywell from Donnie and Dolly on Check TV for the crossover. No Drantz, but we continue on with the crossover anyways. No Jason Bukala today. As we've mentioned a couple of times, he's actually going to be in Vancouver this week. So instead of doing our regular phone hit with Books, today he's going to join me in studio on Friday. Really looking forward to that with Jason Bukala. But we'll do the crossover as usual on a Wednesday. I'll do the whiteboard in the second segment, and then Randeep Janda will join me for the final hour of the show as a special co-host, and we'll really dive in to the debacle last night for the Canucks in Winnipeg. Before we get to Donnie and Dolly and the crossover, I'll throw this out. I threw this out on Twitter, X, before the show. What are you most frustrated with right now? And there's a long, long list of things you could be frustrated with when it comes to the Vancouver Canucks. And I'm not even just talking about that game last night. But looking broadly at the team, at the season, where they are right now, what are you most frustrated with at the moment? Is it the coaches? Is it management? Is it the players? Now, maybe you have something else you want to throw in there, or maybe you want to drill down to a specific player or specific coaching decision or whatever it is. But those are kind of the three broad categories I'll throw out. What has you most frustrated with this team at the moment? Is it the coaches? Is it the management group? Is it the players and their performance? You can send your thoughts in 650, 650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. We'll have a chance to get into them throughout the course of the show. And already the texts are pouring in. Tyler says a big piece needs to move. The team looks toxic. North Creek Dan says, so who's not here come the draft? I say no Besser and no Miller. Lots and lots of angry, and I get it, angry thoughts coming in after Canucks fans watch their team on the wrong side of a bad, bad loss against the Winnipeg Jets last night, 6-1. By the way, I should mention it's a day off for the team. They're back home. They'll play the LA Kings tomorrow at Rogers Arena, and we're in that spot in the season again now. And we weren't here at all last year, but you go back to prior seasons, and there's been these games where you feel like, if this doesn't go the right way, if this game goes poorly for the Canucks, how will the crowd respond? And I think on the heels of this latest big loss, Thursday's game sets up like that, where it's going to be very, very interesting to see what the mood of the home crowd is. How angry are they? How agitated are they? And especially if that game goes south, how will they react once the Canucks return back home to face the LA Kings? All right, as mentioned, we're doing the crossover as usual today. No Drantz, no problem. Let's bring him in now from Donnie and Dolly on Check TV, which you can check out Monday to Friday, 10 to noon. They are Don Taylor and Rick Dollywell. Guys, thank you as always for doing this, and I'm sure it was a very calm, relaxed show for you guys today.
No, it wasn't, and that's as you know, that's a good thing.
Yes,
that's an absolute good thing. It is kind of fun. The problem is that if this keeps going on and on, people get well, people get bored with our show anyway, but they get especially bored if it's the same thing over and over again. But right now, there's a lot of passion out there, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, Rick.
Just like your text line, Jamie, ours was the same thing today. We had a ton of fire Rutherford, fire Alvin, fire Tockett, get rid of Pettersson, get rid of Miller, get rid of Besser. We had the same reaction you guys had. There's a lot of people not happy with this hockey club right now, and they shouldn't be. They just finished a 1-2-2 road trip. But it comes back to me. You beat Toronto, Hockey Night in Canada, shut them out. You got Hronek back. You want to build off Toronto, and then boom, flat. You know, you remember, go back to the Florida game. They beat Florida at home, and then the very next day, or next game, lose to Boston 5-1 on home ice. They simply can't put two good games in a row together. And you can't climb the standings without streaks. Their last seven wins have been followed by seven losses. Their last back-to-back wins were in November, and the schedule doesn't get easier. Like, if you're looking for, if you're a Canuck fan and you're looking for some help here, okay, the injured list is down to one, Joshua, but the Kings are here, big division rivals tomorrow. The Oilers here next, and then Washington's coming to town, and then you got to go to Edmonton. You got to play Dallas, and the schedule is, they had it really good up till the end of December with the schedule, and now they're not getting any breaks on the schedule. I'm sorry, there's just not many easy ones the rest of the way, but they've got to figure out the consistency issues. Why can't they put good back-to-back games together?
It's because JT Miller is injured. That's what you said during our show.
I said he looks injured.
No, you said that he's not able to back check because he's injured. Well, like his shoulder's bothering him and his hands bothering him and his legs apparently are bothering him too because he didn't back check on that third goal.
I will be surprised if Miller is 100%.
We'll get to JT Miller in a bit, guys. Don't worry. I know you were getting into it on the show. We'll touch on JT Miller. But, you know, the consistency point's a good one, Rick. The other thing that really stands out to me is in these games, right, there have been so many blowouts this year, and it just seems like once a game starts to go sideways, it snowballs, and it turns into a disaster too often for this team. Yep. And I think back to the Travis Green era, the Bruce Boudreau era, right? What was one of the things one of the questions we were always asking about this team? It was, when they're facing adversity, when things are going bad, can they turn it around? And last year, they didn't really have to face that, right? They got off to such a dream start. Everything was going incredible, and they kept it going. And they deserve credit for having that great season. But this year, in these specific games, like last night, okay, Kevin Lankinen makes a bad play on the first goal. You're down 1-0. Bad rebound on the second goal. Yep. You're down 2-0. That happens sometimes. You go down 2-0 in a game, you've got to be able to find a way to dig in and rally and turn the momentum in your favor. And it just feels like way too often this season, instead of getting the next goal, making it 2-1, climbing back into it, stopping the bleeding, it turns into 3, 4, 5 goals against in a hurry.
Yeah, and that's surprising because last year, I love this talk from Rick Tockett that there are so many games during an NHL season, or a lot of them, where you just don't have it. You just don't have it that night. The legs aren't there. Anybody who's played sports knows that. You can sleep well, eat well, and for some reason, you just don't have it. You fall behind 1-0. You fall behind 2-0, 2-1, whatever the case may be. The good teams, the great players, fight through that, and they win. And that to me, was one of the trademarks of the Canucks last year. And it just seems to me that that's not there this year. For whatever reason, it is just not there this year. Look at Saturday against Toronto. You know, Elias Pettersson, Selke Award winner. You know, everybody looked like they were playing so great. And Lankinen with the shutout. Yeah, it's easy. You've got things going your way. You're ahead of the game early. Things are going well, and everybody ups their game. I want to see guys, the fans in this town, the fans in Canuck Nation, they want to see players who come through when things aren't going well. That was the case last night. That was the case last year. And last year, they were able to overcome those situations. Last night, most of this season, they haven't. Anybody can be a front runner.
Yeah.
You can win. You can play well in that situation when things are going well. We want to see the guys that come through when things are tough. And that's not happening this year. And it's surprising given what we saw last year.
And you said Jamie, so much adversity this year. They had none last year till a little bit after the All-Star break.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got tired. They had the bad schedule and some of their production went down. But some of the, they're right now 19th in the NHL in goals for. They were ninth last year. They've got guys right now that Pedersen, 3 goals in his last 15, 2 against San Jose at home. DeBrusk, 3-15. Besser, 1-7. Miller, 2-17. You know, your star players got 29 points. Miller and Pedersen, 20. That's not good enough. It just seems like this team was scoring as such a great top 10 scoring team last year. And right now, there are so many guys in funks offensively. I mean, and remember, DeBrusk got hot, and he had a 2-3-week period where he banged in a ton of goals, and now he's right back to the first 19 games where he struggled to score. They got so many guys that are just struggling offensively. It's tough to watch right now.
Yeah, and I want to say something that we talked about at the top of the show, which is really frightening for anybody who cares about the Canucks. Maybe more frightening for Francesco Aquilini than anybody. And that is that this era with Rutherford and Alvin in charge, and I don't think I'm that out of line here. It's beginning to look like the Jim Benning era. Now, let me explain that
for
a second. Jim Benning era, everybody dumps on it. And it was a tire fire. I get that.
Yep.
His first season in charge was very good. 101 points. They make the playoffs. They lose in that first round to Calgary. But overall, a lot of promise going into that second season. Then they don't make the playoffs for, 4 years straight. And it was awful. Think about last season. First full season with Alvin and Rutherford. Outstanding. 109 points. Seemed like one of the better teams in the entire National Hockey League. Seemingly out of nowhere. And then you have this. And everybody questioning the coach and the GM. It's starting to look a little bit like that Jim Benning era. And I'll say it again. That wasn't good.
No.
That's frightening. For anybody who cares about the Canucks.
So and Donnie's bang on. And another one. Jamie, just on what Don's saying, look at the coach. What did he say the other day? I've spent so much time on other things. Yep. What do you think those other things are? You know, the Miller absence, leave of absence, the Miller-Pedersen fiasco with, you know, dealing with these two superstars who don't get along. Tockett's dealt with injuries, the Miller leave. And then the Miller-Pedersen thing, which absolutely was the number one story in the National Hockey League for all the wrong reasons. Like, he looks like a coach that is not – he just looks like a very tired coach. Defeated. You can see in post-game press conferences. You can see in game day skate conferences. He just looks like a guy that's just been, you know, beat up. He just looks beat up.
And if I may, Jamie, look at that third goal. And, you know, the back-checking on that third goal was not great.
Nope.
And I know it's the end of a road trip and all that, but I mean, you tell kids in minor hockey, you never give up on a back-check. Now, what if that puck hops over Connor's stick or Lankinen makes a save and there's a big rebound? There's nobody there to clear it away. You never give up. That must have driven Rick Tocchet
crazy. And it's not just, to me, it's not just the effort on that goal, but it's the read from JT Miller, right? He sees Tyler Myers is in deep, and you can say, hey, that's a bad play from Tyler Myers, but sometimes your defensemen have to activate and try to score goals sometimes, try to help out and pitch in on offense. And JT Miller, he starts in position, and he can see Kyle Connor's there, and then he just kind of loses him and doesn't pay attention to him and then compounds it, as you said, with the poor effort on the back check. So it's just a disaster. Now, on the Jim Benning point, here's where I think it's different. I don't think the bottom is going to fall out of this team unless they choose to make drastic changes the way it fell out of that Vancouver team, right? Because they went from 101 points to 75 to, you know, picking top five in the draft. Like, they were one of the worst teams in the league for a stretch of years after that 101-point season. I don't think that's going to happen again. But what is concerning for me when we start talking about, you know, deja vu and revisiting the past, this is the sixth season that Miller, Pedersen, Hughes, Besser, Demko have been on this team together.
Yeah.
In those 6 years, all right, this is not a new group. This is not a new core. This is their sixth season together. In those 6 years, how many lengthy stretches of really professional, drama-free, competent hockey have we seen, right? Where it's like, hey, they're going out there and they're giving it their all
for
a stretch of months. Yeah, it's last year. Outside of that, it feels like they can't string those stretches together for any appreciable length of time. And this is, you know, this isn't year two of these guys trying to get it done in Vancouver. This is year six. I just wonder how much runway does that core group of players have left? And I'm not even talking about in the eyes of fans, in the eyes of management. At a certain point, you've got to stop running it back with the same group of guys and hoping that it's going to be different next year.
Well, hold it a second, Jamie. They just signed two of those guys. You mentioned 8-year deal.
They sure did.
Seven and eight.
Sorry. You know, so you're saying how can you run back with the same guys? They just signed them both to long-term deals.
But they're both involved in trade talk, trade rumors. So there is that. Let me go back to the Jim Benning thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep driving this home until you agree with me. But here's another difference. And this is in defense of Jim Benning, believe it or not. Back then, there was all the talk about, you know, interference from the ownership level. You don't have that this time around. At least you don't have the talk of that this time around, the rumors of that this time around. A lot of this is on Rutherford and Alvin. And I know you could say, well, they still got last year to look back on and say, well, what about that? I'm just saying that the future looks like it, to me, looks like, and I get there's differences there. Sedin's at the end of their run, and I get all that. But it just looks fairly similar.
Yeah, and well, Rick, to your point, to your point about them signing the deals, because I asked listeners, okay, who are you most frustrated with? Management, coaches, players? And the people who are saying management are pointing to, you know, well, they didn't build the right blue line, they made a mistake, and that's fair enough. But I think if you're pointing the finger at management for anything with this team, it's exactly what you're talking about, Rick. Did they make mistakes signing JT Miller and Elias Pettersson to long-term deals? Did they think that there was another gear those players had or that they could develop this kind of winning mentality? And were they wrong about that? I don't have the answer to that question right now, but I think at this point it's a fair question to ask.
Yes.
Yeah, but were you really going to let Pettersson go? He was 25 at the time, coming off a 100-point season, 89-point season. Those guys don't grow on trees. A top six center at 25 with 400 plus points and 400 plus games. That you couldn't let that guy.
Is it possible he could fall off?
Well, Donnie, come on. You drafted the guy fifth overall. He had a ton of points. You're not letting that guy walk. There's
Rick, ultimately, I agree. You got to sign him. I agree. The upside is there. You have to sign him. But with JT Miller, though, I think it's a different conversation. We know they explored the idea of trading him.
He was older. He's older. And now they got a big decision with Besser. Okay. Yeah.
You're making it sound like $8 million is equivalent to $11.6 million. That's the problem. It's not the re-signing of Elias Pettersson. It's how much you re-signed him for. How much you extended him for. Top five player in the NHL?
Don, blame the team for signing him. Don't blame the player, because you and I and every other person in society would have taken the money.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. I get why they signed Elias Pettersson. And again, I agreed with it at the time. You're right. What are you going to do? Let him walk? Let him become a UFA? It's very hard to trade him away.
You don't draft a guy that high. And then it's not like he was a 40-point player. He's a top six center, and you can't let him walk. You got to resign.
But the result of all of those decisions, right? And they're all defensible. They all make sense in isolation. Yeah. But the result is you're now in a place where you doubled down on this core. And so you're right. Look, can you point to the one decision that was clearly a mistake at the time? Maybe not. Although the Miller one might stand out. But now you're in this position where I wonder if they have some buyer's remorse on not just the Pettersson deal, but just in general choosing to stick with this core and hoping that they figure it out. Because it doesn't look like they are right now. Who knows? Maybe they'll prove me wrong over the second half of the season here, and I'll look like an idiot for this take among many others that I've had. But right now, it just feels like we're going through the exact same thing we went through with Bruce Boudreau and Travis Green in charge. And that's a tough place to be considering the progress we thought they'd made last season.
Oh, my gosh, yes. Yeah. Well, we received a lot today in our Delaney's OK Tire and Langley inbox. That's the sponsor of our inbox.
Hey, Dunbar Lumber text line. Know. Come on. Come on, Dunbar Lumber.
Sorry.
Delaney's. Yeah. Delaney's.
Yeah. I don't want to talk about Dunbar Lumber. The guy in charge there beat us in minor hockey last year. Anyway.
You better watch your back next year.
What the heck I was going to say. It was like, the kids finished with
something that they were texting in.
What we got a lot of today, and I don't know about you guys, But, and thanks for sparking my memory here. It takes a lot these days. We got a lot of, they're boring. Mm. They're boring right now. The Canucks are boring to watch. I don't know if I want to buy tickets. I don't know if I want to watch games. I don't know if I want to watch entire games. We haven't had that for a long time. And that's bad for business. And when things are bad for business, that's when changes start to happen. I don't know. Again, I don't know. You could tell me what your, whatever it is, Dunbar Lumber text line there, whatever has been submitted into there. But we haven't had that, Rick, for a long time.
No.
They're boring right now. They're not great to watch. That's scary.
Watch the 10 minute mark of the first period. They always got one, two, or three shots max.
Yes.
First 10 minutes of a game. And they are dead last in the NHL right now, shots per game with 25. They had 24 in Winnipeg last night. The offense, who's driving? Like, I mean, again, last year, Miller, Pettersson, you know, they were driving the play. They're not driving the play this year like they were driving it last year. They're not.
So I guess the question now is, okay, look, this team, the crazy thing is they're still right in the thick of the playoff race, right? They're only 1 point behind Calgary. They've got every chance to still find a way to hang in here and make the playoffs. But the question becomes for me, okay, you can definitely make the playoffs still, but with this team as it's currently constructed, what can you realistically do once you get there? And, you know, after that second round exit last year against the Edmonton Oilers, management, to their credit, talked a lot about how unsatisfied they were, right? That wasn't the end goal. That was only not even halfway there. They wanted to take the next step. If you instead take a big step backwards this season and either A, miss the playoffs or sneak in and get bounced in the first round, what do you do then? What is ownership's reaction at that point to, you know, not just running in place, but actually going backwards from your dream season a year ago?
Well, again, we'll go back to changes. They would have to make changes, whether it's your roster. I think the Adams Award buys Rick Tocchet time, but maybe an Alvin was a Gregory Award candidate. Maybe it happens up top with the GM or the president. I see you would have to make significant changes in large part because that's the right thing to do when you have a disappointing season and you want to improve. But also, I'll go back to what I said earlier, that's probably what you have to do in order to run a successful business, to keep people interested, to keep people buying tickets, to keep people away from, you know, texting into shows like the two of ours and saying this team is god awful boring. So you'd have to make some significant changes at that point. Right, Rick?
Well, it's amazing to me, Jamie, the coaching situation is up in the air right now. Like you talk to people, we don't know. This guy won the Jack Adams last year. I can't sit here and tell you he's going to be back with the Canucks next year.
No.
Like, I mean, he's got a clause where he can walk away from the Canucks. And wouldn't that be
that's a great point.
A strong statement of him saying, this place is a mess, I'm not coming back. Like, if Tocchet ever executed his clause saying, no, you know, I'm going to pass, I'm going to go for another opportunity, but, you know, that would not be good because he would be basically saying, this place is a mess, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
And if the team doesn't bring him back, they're going to look foolish because of the way they treated Boudreaux and brought hand-picked Tocchet. This was their guy, hand-picked, you know, after the way they treated Boudreaux. And if they don't pick up the option on Tocchet, then they're going to look foolish because you handpicked this guy and you're getting rid of him a year and a half later.
And how often does an NHL coach walk away from a job, right? Given how little job security they have, you know what I mean? It's so rare. It would be so shocking to see it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would be a big deal if he chooses to do that.
Does he look happy to you right now?
No.
Well, Jamie, does he look happy to you right now?
I think he's in shock right now.
I think he's in shock.
Yeah, one of the things he said last night, it's on me. I got to get guys committed. He's been here for almost 2 years.
Yeah.
It's what, 2 years at the end of January. And he's still talking about, I've got to find a way to get guys committed. And I don't think he's talking about, you know, Jonathan Lekkomäki and Max Sasson. I think he's talking about guys at the other end of the lineup. And for a coach like Rick Tocchet, that must be incredibly frustrating that you're 2 years into your tenure almost and still talking about, how do I get commitment out of my top players?
That you know, you just said something there that may be one of the few positives this year. I've liked the way Sasson has looked and Lekkomäki.
There you go.
Well, it's not going to help them get into the playoffs.
No.
But that's it. But here's another thing. Again, in our inbox, Delaney's okay. Taryn Langley.
Oh,
inbox.
Come on, Donnie, you're killing me.
Dunbar Lumber.
Yeah. Delaney's.
Okay. But what we've received a lot of today is, what about the changes on the coaching staff? No more Mike Yeo.
Yeah.
This is nothing against anybody who's there now, but no more Mike Yeo. No more Ian Clark. Yeah. No more, and a favorite of Rick's, Jeremy Colton down in Abbotsford. Yeah. Like, has that had an effect at all? Just some food for thought.
There's been a lot of changes.
Not many people are talking about.
Yeah. There's been a lot of changes.
Yeah. And Sefcovski was added on the bench, power play, right? You know, I see people whining about that move quite a bit as well. But look, you got Malhotra down in Abbey. You got the Sedin twins. I wouldn't be surprised if on this homestand you see a lot of the Sedin twins at practice trying to help solve some of these issues as well.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating. I was saying just before you guys got on, it's going to be fascinating to see what the mood at Rogers is tomorrow when they take on the LA Kings, and especially if that one turns ugly. It could be a really, really interesting scene down at Rogers. Guys, awesome as always. Thank you for doing this. Rick, I forgot to mention, congrats on not having to talk to Drantz today. It's a big moment for you.
Oh, it was great.
Yeah. Hey, one thing I just want to say also, Jamie, it's Ken Priestley at Dunbar, and he does a great job
in
South Delta minor hockey. So I said, you get those guys there.
Yeah, Ken Priestley, of course.
Stanley Cup winner, Ken Priestley. Out there, South Delta.
All right. Well,
Stanley Cup
sharpening
winner.
Sharpening skates now.
Pittsburgh Penguins.
Selling lumber, sharpening skates, coaching minor hockey. He does it all. The true triple threat, Ken Priestley.
There you go.
All right. Thanks, fellas. Appreciate it. We'll chat next week. All right, that's the crossover with Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal. You can watch them Monday to Friday, 10 to noon on Check TV on Donnie and Dolly. They join us, as always, on Wednesdays for the crossover. And, as you heard, and they're unnamed. I have no idea what the sponsor is inbox. They're getting a lot of frustrated texts today. No surprise. We're getting a lot of frustrated texts today as well. I'll do the whiteboard in the next segment. Give a few more takes on last night's game. Run through the other housekeeping notes in the whiteboard. Maybe have a chance to dive into the inbox and read some of your feedback as well. If I don't do it in the next segment, we'll definitely get into it in the final hour with Randeep Janda. But the whiteboard is coming up next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, we are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, working together with you in step. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and it is hopping today, so send your comments in now. Now joining me in studio again for the second time this week. What a treat for me. He is the color analyst here on Sportsnet 650 for the Vancouver Canucks and also, of course, a big part of Hockey Night in Canada, Punjabi. He is Randeep Janda. What's going on, man?
I sense some sarcasm in that.
No.
What a treat.
How dare you? I love hanging out with you, man. I should also mention, of course, that Randeep Janda on Sportsnet 650 is a presentation of Bells and Whistles, your new favorite place to catch all the action, hockey, football, soccer, and more on Fraser, right in the Fraser Hood, on socials at Bells and Whistles YVR. So Monday, we had you on. Great day. Everyone positive, feeling good about that win against the Leafs. 3-0 on the road. Petey monster defensive performance. You know, Hronek's almost coming back. Is this the turning point of the season? And then they followed up with, I don't even want to say one of their worst performances of the year, because there's been so many. But it's like, it's a top 10 worst performance for sure. I don't know if it's top 5, to be honest. I don't know if it's the top 5 because there's been that many bad ones, but it's somewhere in the mix. Anyways, they followed up with a 6-1 drubbing in Winnipeg. Like, I get normally after a bad game, even good teams have really bad games sometimes. You say, you know what, burn the tape and we move on. I think it becomes a lot harder to buy that when it's You can barely go 2 weeks without having one of these games.
Yeah, to use a Dave Chappelle reference from his old show, the Canucks in this regard have been habitual line steppers. They keep on putting up efforts that are you know, they're one-sided, right? And to your point, Winnipeg, Seattle, that comeback in the final 5 minutes, Calgary on the opener, the Islanders,
New Jersey, Boston.
There's a number
Edmonton.
Of them. Edmonton as well. So there you
going.
Go. But that there's something about players coming back from injury that this team doesn't respond. The Dakota Joshua game against the Islanders, it felt like that game.
Yeah.
The difference here is that Winnipeg's got firepower. The Islanders did not have firepower, and they still took it to the Canucks. Now, overall, I think this comes back to what is the identity of this team? What is their style of play? What can they lean back on in their nights that they're not going? And we don't know what this identity is. We knew what last year's team was about. We knew that, you know, when there was, first of all, there weren't this many injuries, but they were able to form identity. They were able to play strong defensive hockey and build from that. And Jamie, we just haven't seen that consistently enough from this team. There's a couple of games on that road trip where you're saying, hey, good D structure. They limited chances against. Sure, the offense wasn't there, but at the very least, they were showing you something in their DNA.
Mm-hmm.
And in a couple of games on this trip, that was the case. The others, it wasn't. So I still think, okay, this team has gotten healthy now, so the excuses are out the window. You get your number two defenseman back. You got Elias Pettersson back on this trip. You got Quinn Hughes back on the trip. And it's unfortunate that they lay an egg in that game, but the rest of the way here, you can't guarantee health for the rest of the season, but while you are healthy, it's go time. You got to start picking up points here, and it doesn't get any easier. We know the strength of schedule to start off the season was pretty soft for Vancouver, but it's you know, you got to have commitment in the game. Toronto, they had it. In Winnipeg, it was one or two haymakers that the Winnipeg Jets threw, and I would argue that Vancouver actually shot themselves in the foot in those two goals, so it wasn't even haymakers. And they buckled.
Yes.
You can't buckle in games like that.
It's the buckling that really concerns me. It feels, because bad things happen, you know, and Kevin Lankinen, that was a bad play. There's no doubt about it. He gifts them an opening goal. That's tough. But what do you do after that? How do you respond after that? And to your point about what's the identity of the team, what's their DNA, you know, last season, first of all, they scored first most of the time, which was great. And, you know, if we're talking about whether or not they're front runners, that's maybe a piece of evidence in support of it. But they had the ability to, in the right moments, play lockdown defense to, okay, hey, we need to change momentum. Well, here's Dakota Joshua crashing in on the forecheck and throwing a hit and turning the puck over, and then Connor Garland's creating a scoring chance. Now, I know Dakota Joshua's out of the lineup, but my point is they had things they could rely on in moments where it looked like the game might get away from them or where things might go awry. There's no reason they shouldn't be able to do those things. Like, I get, oh, turnover, no Zadorov, no Lindholm, all that. You still have guys who are capable of playing defense at a high level, who are capable of getting in on the forecheck, and yet instead, when a couple of things go against you, as you said, it's buckled. There's no pushback.
Yeah, and you mentioned Zadorov and Lindholm. I think it's fair to say the Canucks played their best hockey without those guys. Prior to them getting to Vancouver is when the Canucks were probably playing their best hockey last year. The inability to reset is something that I think this team is really struggling with. Last year, it was a strong suit where they have a bad 20. They're able to reset, whether it was the coaches saying, and Rick Tocchet himself said, hey, sometimes I don't even go in there. The players know, and they're driving the bus themselves. They understand where they're not playing well or where they need to add a little bit more to their game. And they haven't been able to do that. Now, we're not in the room. We don't know what the conversations are like. There are some players that are no longer on this team that we talked about them last year that were kind of like coaches. Ian Cole being one of them, right?
Yeah.
He was a guy that behind the scenes was a huge talking point for the team where if you need to focus, he was one of those guys that helped that. I don't want to overstate the value, but I think it's important to discuss that. But that is a shortcoming of this team this year. That reset point, the ability to take a punch, right? We talk about it, boxing analogies. I love them.
Sure.
Having the team last year had a granite chin.
Yeah.
Like they could withstand anything. This team, they're taking that punch and they got the old stanky leg going on, right? They're wobbling. So you still have time. You have the second half of the season. You have to get your game together now. The excuse of not being healthy has gone out the window.
Yes.
And you know who doesn't care about that? The rest of the NHL. Mm-hmm. The Calgary Flames don't care about that. The St. Louis Blues don't care about that. Maybe Utah doesn't care about that. you got to take care of your own business.
And health doesn't prevent you from having effort. And again, on the road trip prior to that, they did have effort for the most part. It wasn't as if they were coming out completely flat, even in the games they lost, right? It wasn't a disaster from effort, which makes it all the more frustrating that as you get healthy, you're not able to continue with that effort, continue with that level of defensive intensity, because it's one thing for a team that's comfortably in a playoff spot, that's top three in their division or top two or something, to take their foot off the gas on occasion. That happens. I get it. It's a long season. It's 82 games. You're going to have off nights. You're going to have nights where your effort isn't there. But this is a team that should be scrapping for a playoff spot. This is a team that should have a sense of urgency and should look at it and say, man, we got Filip Hronek back. We're finally basically all healthy. Let's go and put our best foot forward here. Let's go and have one of our best efforts of the season. We should have our legs here. And instead, it's the complete opposite. And if that's the most concerning thing, is just that lack of urgency given where they find themselves in the standings right now.
I think yesterday, of course, the start to that game was terrible for Vancouver. Anytime a natural hat trick is scored against you, it's a humbling experience. The second period is where I thought I expected to see more from Vancouver. When you're down 3-0 to Winnipeg, you've got the best goaltender in the world. You've got one of the stingiest teams defensively in the NHL. You know it's going to be a tough road back. I think you can accept that you're probably not going to win that game. They simply don't drop points. Yet, you expect a bit of a pushback there in the second period. You bring some energy. You bring, hey, if we're going to go down in this game, we're going to go down swinging. And we just didn't see that from Vancouver. I know Connor Garland said, hey, he liked the fight back or the pushback. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I just didn't see it. I didn't really, outside of Kiefer Sherwood throwing 10 hits, you didn't necessarily see the being a thorn in the side of the Winnipeg Jets. It felt like whenever the Jets wanted to ramp up the style of play, they could take over that game at will. So that's one of the areas I look at with this team is last year, it was not only that they played physical in moments, whether it was JT Miller, dictating at the beginning of a game. We saw it numerous times against Connor McDavid, being physical with the player right off the bat. Hey, this is going to be played on my terms or our terms. Saw that numerous times last year. Even that terrible 10-7 game last year against Minnesota, it was a physical, physical game as well. I remember JT going head-to-head with Joel Eriksson Ek. That was a game where JT has scored a hat-trick as well. But that game started with essentially targeting the player and saying, it's a home game for you. It may be a schedule loss for us, but we're going to go toe-to-toe on this. Like, there was a real assertiveness to the game last year. I think they're just a little passive this year. And maybe that's a lack of confidence, but you're not seeing that from JT's the player I highlight. But I think throughout the lineup, you're not seeing that other than maybe Kiefer Sherwood.
Well, it's interesting to hit that commentary from Garland, right? About, hey, the pushback there, it feels like a little bit of a disconnect between the players and the coach, because the coach, after the game, said, everyone had a tough game. And then he starts talking about, how hard it is to do all the things necessary to be a consistently elite team, how they're not doing those things, which of course has been a talking point really since the end of last year, that the idea that it's not going to get easier just because we had a good season, it's going to get harder. But the thing that stood out the most to me from Rick Tocchet yesterday was him saying, quite frankly, that he needs to find a way to get guys committed. Rick Tocchet's coming up on 2 years as the Canucks head coach, and he's still openly letting us know that he's not getting full commitment from the players on the team. And again, I said this to Donnie and Dolly, like, I don't think he's talking about, Max Sasson. I don't think he's talking about Phil DiGiuseppe or Noah Juulsen. I think he's talking about the guys at the top of the lineup. This is not, or it shouldn't be, early in the process of Rick Tocchet getting buy-in. This should be, as you said last year, the players were supposedly developing a culture where they could kind of police themselves and didn't need the coach to find that commitment for them. The fact that we're 40-plus games into this season and Rick Tocchet's saying that kind of stuff, that's alarming. And he's got to be incredibly frustrated.
And he's not the only one saying it. Patrick Alvin's saying, I need more from certain players, whether it's Elias Pettersson, JT Miller. He mentioned Brock Besser in that conversation with Ian McIntyre as well. So the fact that your core players, when you're not performing consistently as a team or individuals, I think that's fair to see, right? And going back to last game, I think we were all applauding Elias Pettersson in the Toronto game, MIA against the Winnipeg Jets. And he's mostly matched up against the Adam Lowry line. That's a physical matchup for him. And what have we seen from him in the playoffs? When he's playing those big centermen, sometimes a little overly physical, he doesn't have a great matchup, whether it's Sissons against Nashville, whether it was even Michael McCarron. And he was unable to make that make that, you know, make an impact. JT Miller, same thing, right? JT Miller not on power play one early on in that game, even before the goal that was scored with him not skating back as hard as you probably want him to and being positionally off. There's a couple of brutal giveaways in the defensive zone, you know, just up the middle, the kind of that usually we see on the backhand with JT. On this play was the forehand. And those are types of plays that you can't make. I think from a coaching perspective, and Rick Tocchet, offense is one thing, but if you're not playing the right way in your own end, this is a coach that won't stand for that.
Yeah.
And we're seeing it, unfortunately, consistently enough where you might have a good game here, you might stick to your structure, but do you make key mistakes at key times that cost your team? And unfortunately, we saw that way too much last night.
Well, yeah, that's people bring up the injury thing with JT Miller. And again, I have no doubt that he's fighting through stuff. And yeah, he deserves credit for that. We've seen it a lot.
Yep.
He has been extremely, extremely reliable in terms of availability in his time in Vancouver, certainly with physical ailments, right? He doesn't miss time with them. So that's great. That's something you want in a player. But if he's not, like, I don't think it's an injury that's causing him to make those turnovers. You know what I mean? I don't know if it's an injury that's causing him to just kind of ignore Kyle Connor sneaking behind him on that breakaway goal. And the big tell for me that it goes beyond just an injury issue is the power play. The fact that you're down 1-0 against a really good team on the road and you have a power play opportunity in the first period, a chance to reset the game, and Jonathan Lekker-Mackey is out there instead of a guy who, other than Quinn Hughes, has been your best power play player, is your best power play player, right? A guy who scored a ton of goals for you, set up a ton of goals. Even if he's dealing with something, that should be the spot where you want to get him minutes. So say, okay, here's some easy, potentially productive minutes for you. The fact that he's not out there in that situation, I think speaks to something bigger than just battling through injuries going on.
And even without JT Miller on power play one, we saw some puck management issues. And early on in that game, what was the biggest issue with JT? I think that was, of course, there's the mistake on the 2-0 goal.
Yep.
But even beyond that, it was puck management. So if you're a coach and you're saying, hey, you're not playing the way I want you to play early on in this game, power play one, no, we're going to go with the young kid. That's telling you something.
Yep.
That's telling you, we often talk about that with players further down the lineup. Nils Höglander, yeah, okay, trust issues, right? Erik Brännström, trust issues. Yesterday's game, 14 and change for JT Miller, followed a 13 and change game. We're talking about two games and he's played 27 minutes.
Yeah.
For JT Miller, he's...
That's like one game.
That's one game. He played 22, 23 consistently during his Vancouver Canucks career. So no doubt, I think there is a confidence thing there right now. It's, hey, we need you to play better. But with it's not only JT, though, to your point. There seems to be, whether it's a Elias Pettersson, whether there's a Brock Besser, but when you are known as that guy that is the emotional engine of the team, you have a little bit more responsibility of, hey, if you're able to make that moment, if you're able to score a goal is one thing. But physically, you know, one of the premier power forwards in the NHL, yeah, there's a little bit more that's going to be asked of you. And unfortunately for JT, whether it's injury, whether it's confidence, whether it's trust, whatever it may be, he's lacking that right now.
Yeah, and as you said, you know, given his role, how often have we heard, right, he's the guy who drags the team into the fight when he's at his best, but I do wonder if they can go the other way too, right? If he's not at his best and kind of dramatically so, what impact does that have on the rest of the team when they see a guy who's a leader? And, you know, you can extend this criticism to Pettersson as well, right? If you're farther down the lineup and you see both of those guys consistently having really off nights, really ineffective, not impactful nights, that's got to be a difficult situation for, you know, the third and fourth liners and the other guys up down the lineup.
Yeah, and when we start looking at the underlying numbers, hey, you know, it's great that Suter and Bluger are having positive influences on their night, on the night, and they're maybe in the positive at certain stretches in this game, but they're not going to get you to the promised land. They're going to help, but they're not going to lead you to the promised land. You need, you know, JT and you need Elias Pettersson to do that. Yesterday, I thought Scott Arneil, like, there was a bit of a matchup game going on, but he was fine rolling four lines. He was so confident in all of his lines to say, I don't care who, you know, Kyle Connor's line plays against. It could be against the top line. It could be the fourth line. We're going to win that matchup. I felt the second line with Ehlers too. Anytime he hit the neutral zone with speed, it didn't matter who was up against him. So that's the confidence that one group has right now in the Winnipeg Jets. And Vancouver, the guys are lacking. You know, if there's any silver lining to last night's game, it was Nils Höglander finally scored a goal. Good for him. But you're going to need everybody in this lineup, especially the top six, to drive and get you chances, score goals. And look at the schedule, right? The next two games. You've got the LA Kings, which are actually a hotter team than the Winnipeg Jets going back about a month. They are very stingy.
They're a really good team.
Very stingy. I don't know how Calgary beat them on the weekend. I worked that game for Hockey Night in Canada, Punjabi, but like that was an off night from them. Dustin Wolf had a lot to do with that as well. But this is a team that is so stingy. They're playing offensively-minded hockey, but they're also very good defensively. And then you got the Oilers coming to town on Saturday, which they're looking...
They're playing great, too.
So, yeah, you got to up your game. You got to find that emotional investment, whether it comes from your top guys, whether it comes from the back end with Filip Hronek finally coming back. You know, you're going to need something extra here. And what do we talk about? Excuses of the injury. And it's not the players weren't using them.
Yeah.
But a lot of us were talking about, hey, you're able to give them a bit of a pass because they're not healthy. Well, that pass is gone.
Oh,
that pass has
absolutely
been revoked, right?
Yes, that pass has been revoked for sure. And I think we're going to learn a lot about this team from here on out. Now, I threw this question out earlier to the listeners and asked them to send their text in 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. Who are you most frustrated with on the Canucks right now? Is it the players? Is it the coaching staff? Or is it the front office and management? And I'll say my answer right off the top. For me, it's pretty easy. It's the players. And I'll address management in a second here because I think there's very valid criticisms. Of course there are. There's valid criticisms of the coach as well. But if you're just talking most frustrated, yes. Is the roster perfect? No, of course it's not. Has Rick Tocchet's coaching been perfect? No, of course it's not. But if you're a star player in the NHL, you shouldn't need perfect. Yeah, you need certain line mates, you need certain things, of course you do. That's realistic, that's reasonable, but you're never going to have a perfect team. And if that's what you're waiting for, and if that's, you know, the only thing, the only time when we can really hold the players accountable for their performance is when everything is perfect around them, that's never going to happen. Sometimes you have to make your own luck as a player. You have to make the circumstances better. You have to be a part of the solution. They're not passengers. They shouldn't be passengers and say, oh, well, hey, you know, we just can't move the puck, so what are we going to do? No, you have to go out and still find a way to be effective and to win games. And I'm just outside of Quinn Hughes, who I want to remove him from this conversation. He has been completely beyond criticism this year. He's been phenomenal. Beyond that, the top players on this team, to me, if you're a fan wondering who you should be most frustrated with, that's where I'm pointing the finger.
I agree with you, because what was the investment that the team made in the offseason? We're going to get wingers for the top dogs. Pettersson got DeBrusk, and we know that lasted a little bit, and then he got switched to the JT Miller line, but there's been some kind of mixing and matching going on. JT Miller has Brock Besser, the duo that they've worked with the last couple of years. Those are your duos. Those are your, you know, really strong players that you're going to have. All right, you're the franchise players. You're the 1-2 punch. But you've also got one guy who scored 40 goals, another guy that, playing with Pettersson, the hope was he would get 30. And to his credit, Jake DeBrusk has done his job, right? Getting 17 goals. He's been able to at least show you that he can be a one-shot scorer. He can go to the dirty areas. Is he streaky? Yes, but which NHL scorer other than Ovechkin and Matthews and all these other guys, the higher echelon guys, are not streaky? So if you make that investment to say, we're going to invest on the winger side of things, you guys need to drive play. You guys need to be game breakers. You guys need to win your matchups. That onus is on the top six. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying only Pettersson and Miller, because you need the trio to work together. But if you are the centerman and the franchise players on those lines, that's your assignment. And you know, I've heard in the past as well, a number of former players say, this is the thing about top line players. They make everybody around them better. And that's a responsibility. It might be unfair to a certain extent, but that's why you get paid the big bucks as well. So I understand the back end is not something that is ideal. Far from it. You need another right shot D. You need another puck mover, whether it's righty or lefty. But there was an investment made here. And as the group of players, whether it's on the back end or the forwards, you got to work together to win your matchups. And I don't know if, like, you know, even the last game, the Lankinen mistake, he makes a rare mistake. You know, it's not a good one.
No.
But how do you rebound from that?
Yeah, it happens.
You know, Soucy is maybe out of position on that second goal. He leaves a 2-on-1 down low, and Lankinen lets out a juicy rebound. That's a mistake. Miller not skating back and Myers getting caught up ice. Like, those are mistakes in-game that you can control. That's on the players. Rick Tocchet doesn't want, you know, guys coming back at 70%. So I still think there's a good enough team there on the ice to have better efforts in games, Jamie, and that's on the players.
Yeah, and JB texts in here, I fully agree this core needs to figure it out. How many coaches do they need? First, the complaint under Green was it's too boring, too systematic. Boudreaux, oh, too loose, no structure. Now Tockett's too defensive, they're not driving the net enough. What are they, Goldilocks and need the right temperature porridge? And I think that's a good point, right? Like, you're yo-yoing back and forth between these different coaching styles, and it looks good for a little bit, but then the problems start to seep back in. And again, it's not the coach's fault at a certain point. And I would extend the, you know, are they Goldilocks and need the right temperature porridge thing to the supporting cast that they're being given too. Again, it's not perfect. We all know that. Of course, there's a big problem on the blue line. And everything we've heard is that management is out there trying to make a trade for one. But yeah, management deserves a lot of criticism for the decisions they made on the blue line, for not adding more puck moving, not adding more depth on the right side. But again, that doesn't absolve the players. That does not absolve them from having to be at their best and bring a much more consistent effort. And somebody else texted in, it's the players. Roster construction isn't why you're getting scored on a minute into a period. And again, I think that's a great point. You can have a poorly constructed roster. That doesn't mean you have to buckle when things go against you. So yes, we can get into what management did wrong and the mistakes they made this summer and how it's hurting the team. Of course we can, but none of it should remove responsibility from the players and what they're doing on the ice.
Yeah, and I think coaching as well, where we can have a debate about, is the style of play that they're playing, you know, are they maximizing that? Should there be more variety in their attack? We've had those discussions. But if you're eating pressure, if you're not making plays at the right time, if you're not carrying the puck, the coach is saying, go out there and make plays, attacks empty space, you know, skate into that pressure, make a play. That's not on the players. Your coach wants you to do a little bit more in that regard. So I look at that and say, hey, it's not perfect on the management and the coaching front. Of course, when your team is outside the playoffs after winning the division last year, after, you know, winning a round, taking the Edmonton Oilers to game 7, of course, it's a disappointment. But what was one of the conversations leading into this year? It was, all right, the bar has been set in terms of expectations. Mm-hmm. And what is required to go back to that ground of being a playoff team? Can you match it? Now there's expectation. Last year, there was an expectation. And as of right now, of course, injuries are a big part of it. I don't want to diminish that. But the remaining games of season, like, that's not a thing right now. You've gone through a really rough patch. You were still in a wild card spot up until a couple of days ago. You gotta run with it now, right? So yeah, it's not looking great right now. But this can be turned around in a game or two. Like, if you have a win against LA, all of a sudden, you know, this city swings pretty quickly to the other way. Mm-hmm. But you gotta have, I think, over the next 10 to 12 games, you have to show what is Vancouver Canucks hockey.
Yeah,
we referenced last year. But what is Vancouver Canucks hockey this season? And that's what I'm waiting for. And really, it's on the players to show that.
This text comes in from D in Abbotsford. You guys don't get it. Good defense drives the offense. Completely disagree with your opinions. Our defense is so bad, it prevents the Canucks offense from gaining momentum. Look, no one's saying the blue line isn't a problem. Of course it is. Of course the lack of puck moving is going to limit their ceiling offensively. But at the same time, look at Elias Pettersson and JT Miller out there on the power play with Quinn Hughes, okay? When there's no, you can't blame Vincent Desharnais for missing a stretch pass or anything like that when you're on the power play with Quinn Hughes. Do they look at the top of their games? Does Elias Pettersson look like he is fully locked in and aggressive and attacking when he's on the power play? Again, this is a situation where you can't blame the fifth and sixth defenseman on the team. So yes, it's a problem, but there are plenty of circumstances where either on the power play or even just at even strength with Quinn Hughes on the ice, where you're not seeing the best consistently, anything close to consistently, from Elias Pettersson and JT Miller. No one's saying the defense isn't an issue. Of course it is. But there's still so much more those two guys could be doing.
I think it's fair to say that the management took a bet on Vinny Desharnais, and that is not hit. It's far from hitting.
Yep.
He's a player that still is a work in progress, but how much are you going to actually get out of that player if you want to play a certain style of making, you know, clean passes out of the zone? We saw this team add Zadorov. And even in games last year, remember there's certain games where they were struggling to get the puck out of their own zone. And why Zadorov was a breath of fresh air was that he would skate into that pressure. He was not afraid in moments. And that's also maybe some of the cons with Nikita Zadorov. Sometimes he makes that mistake because he's kind of fearless in that regard. He's not the only player that can do that. But that was a change last year. This team didn't have, you know, the greatest mobile defenseman last year either, right? They added one piece, which was earlier on in December. Now,
and also, let's not pretend that Elias Pettersson's drop-off happened this year, right? Like, he started failing to produce when Nikita Zadorov and Ian Cole were on the team.
Sure.
And you're not you can't sit here and tell me that the difference between, you know, 100-point pace Elias Pettersson and 65-point pace Elias Pettersson is Nikita Zadorov and Ian Cole. No. Like, come on! We're not even talking about elite puck movers on the back end here. They're good, they're fine at it, but it's not like they're these elite offensive defensemen. That's not what explains the drop-off in production.
No, you need your best players. We hear this line over and over again. We hear it especially in the playoffs. But you still need, whether that's a JT Miller dropping deep. Remember, making that pass to Lekkomäki in Montreal, that's exactly what he did, right? When you're not out there with Quinn Hughes as a centerman, you have to take a responsibility of, hey, maybe my team needs me to help out a little, drop a little deeper. We've seen that with Elias Pettersson. We haven't seen it consistently enough. Is that an indictment on some decisions management made? Sure, right? Like, nobody's saying that back end is perfect. Far from it. They need to address that. And if they can address that in the next couple of weeks here, Jamie, I feel pretty good about this team despite all the noise around it. But I like from a talent perspective, right?
Like, I'm ranting and raving here today, but still, it's like, if you told me they make the playoffs and they're like the team no one wants to face, it's like, I can see that happening
for sure.
Because all it takes is these guys figuring it out and finding that next level.
Calgary, I know they've beaten Vancouver a couple of times this year. Do they scare anybody though?
No.
No, they work hard. Shouts to Ryan Huska for making them work hard. All right, beyond that, St. Louis, not really scared of that team, right?
Yeah.
Kyrou and Thomas are good players.
And the coaching bump, I don't know. I don't know if I fully buy into it, but yeah, I'm not scared of them. That's for sure.
There is clearly a tier one and tier two and a tier three in the Western Conference right now. We know who's in tier one. It's the Jets. It's the Golden Knights. You can throw the Oilers in there when they're clicking as well. There's a tier two. I think Colorado is maybe, if they get going, they could potentially jump into tier one. Dallas is really strong too. So, you know, but there's a tier three right now as well, and that's wild card two. Tier three is the wild card two. And Vancouver right now is fighting for that. I think Vancouver's ceiling could be a tier two team in the Western Conference.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that they're performing right now is wild card two is what you're fighting for. And the opposition is not all that daunting in that tier three. If you get your game together, if you add a defenseman, there's a path, a really good path for this team to make the playoffs and potentially do something. But the problem is you got to figure that out real quick because all it takes is a couple of losses in division and you're plummeting.
Yeah, and they're starting to run out of runway here as we go into the second half of the season. All right, went a little over here, but we'll take a break. Come back for the final segment. We can dive into the inbox. Any questions you have, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can send your thoughts in. What do we see next from the Vancouver Canucks? I mean, on the ice tomorrow against LA, potentially off the ice from management as well. What are you most curious about for the remainder of this season? Send your questions in. We'll take a break. Back with Randy Janda here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
You want me to think that you're wild?
Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd broadcasting live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. Randeep Janda joining me in studio for another segment here. And we mentioned on Monday, Randeep, that you're off to Canmore for Hockey Day in Canada on the weekend as part of Hockey Night in Canada Punjabi. You've got your packing list. Are you ready for the extreme cold in Canmore?
Did you bring a coat?
Yeah, bring a coat.
Yeah, I've been told by multiple people to take a coat with me,
don't go in shorts and flip-flops.
No.
If you were planning on doing that, don't do it.
So the last time I was in Canmore was in the summer. Beautiful weather.
Sure.
I don't think that's going to be the case this time around, but I do have some progress. First and foremost, the temperature has gone up a little bit.
Ooh, there you go.
Four Always degrees exciting. Up. So it's no longer minus 21. It's minus 17 on Saturday. So things are looking up for me and my team.
Cancun or Canmore?
Exactly right. The other thing is,
people often get them confused.
Why wouldn't you? The other thing is,
going to Canmore for spring break.
Never did that. I did the Cancun thing. Similar vibe, though, I'm sure.
Very similar vibe.
I also did some shopping today.
Yeah.
Got some base layers.
There you go.
Got the thermal socks,
there
gloves
you go.
And everything. So I'm very...
You're set.
I'm set. I'm ready to go. I might swing by your favorite place, Mark's Work Warehouse, after the show.
King's Game Mall?
Yeah. That's your hood. And second of all,
love
it's
King
very
Game
much
Mall.
Your style. You're,
it is, yeah. It is.
You're Mr. Flannel
this shirt
right here.
Probably came from Mark's. I'm not going to lie. I have a sneaking
sales
suspicion.
Team, what are you doing? Get this man a deal.
Seriously.
Come on.
Seriously. If... It's a layup, basically, at this point. All right, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And as we dive in here, Thomas in Mount Pleasant, speaking of Mount Pleasant, says, question, is management as confused as we are about this team? I mean, where do they go from here? They have the pieces, they have the coaching, it just seems like they don't have the heart. So now what? And just that question about, is management as confused we are about this team? That really is... one of the most interesting questions at this juncture. And you go back to, it's not just reacting to the loss last night, right? For people who are saying, oh, overreacting to one game. Patrick Alvin, 2 weeks ago said he's glass half empty about this season, you know, took shots at his key players saying they need to get better. Elias Pettersson thought it was going to be easy. He needs to mature. So when we are reacting very critically to a result like that, like last night, I think that's really important context, is that it seems to be confirmation of a lot of things that the general manager has been publicly concerned about very, very recently. That's important. So I think it's fair to wonder, okay, we've already heard that from Patrick Alvin. What is going through their minds when they witness an effort and a result like last night? And I just keep coming back to, you know, I've been a little skeptical of the they're going to trade JT Miller or Elias Pettersson, or they're going to trade both of them, right? I mean, especially Pettersson. He's still so young, or at least, you know, much younger than JT Miller. You so recently signed him to that 8-year deal. It would be really, really shocking. But given Alvin's commentary, and the other thing I can't help escaping is, you know, Jim Rutherford's not one to sit on his hands. And so that's where it gets really interesting to me. We've already heard a little bit about what they think of this team. We know Jim Rutherford is bold, is not afraid to take bold swings. Does it come to a head at some point before the trade deadline in March?
And the second thing you said there is really the thing that sticks out to me. You look at history, whether it's with the Vancouver Canucks, Patrick Alvin, Jim Rutherford, not afraid to make moves. They've tinkered mostly, and they made some big moves. The Lindholm deal was a big one. Zadorov was more of a medium, and they've made a lot of small moves. But they identify things that they like about their team and they don't like about their team, and they try to fix it. Historically, going back to his days in Pittsburgh, he did that a lot, right? James Neal being shipped out, Hornquist coming in, Ron Hainsey coming in, making some moves on the back end, picking up some skill guys, picking up guys like Nick Bonino that played further down his lineup. Like, if he sees a move, he's going to make it. He usually doesn't wait around too much.
Yeah. And January is Rutherford time, man. With Lindholm last year, like, this is his time.
But things have not been going all that great for the last little bit here. This is a team that has been a borderline playoff team. And this is very unlike a Jim Rutherford organization, which makes you think, maybe he thinks tinkering is not what's required here. Maybe you need to do something bigger, right? You can change up a room, you can bring somebody in, and okay, of course, we look at the back end and say, you got to upgrade the third pair, but maybe it's a second pair. Maybe it's adding somebody to the first pair and adding Hronek to a second pair, like something substantial. You talk about the forward group. Of course, those conversations, whether we believe them here in Vancouver or not, there's a lot of insiders that are coming out with information every single day. So the longer this goes on, based on the DNA that Rutherford has going back, you know, decades, and Alvin has in the last few years, the longer this goes on, it does feel like there's a bigger move to be made here. And this has never been a management group that is afraid to make a move to change up the room. They look at doing that. Rutherford's been doing that for decades in this league. But the longer you wait, it makes you kind of think, okay, maybe this is going to be a deeper kind of a bigger move potentially if this team doesn't turn around.
Yeah, and the fascinating part of this is, I think if my math is right, they have 18 games between now and the trade deadline. And of course, that's not that many because even though it's not until March, there's the break in the schedule for the Four Nations faceoff. So, you know, 18 games, that's not nothing. That's almost a quarter of a season, really, when you think about it, a fifth of a season anyways. But it's also, if you're going to convince management that, you know, actually we're a number three defenseman away from being a Stanley Cup contender, you've got to do something really impressive in those next 18 games. And realistically, like in the next, you know, 10 to 15 to give them some time to kind of figure out that move. Is there enough runway, not just till the end of the season, but to the trade deadline and really the internal deadline to make a decision on this for management? Is there enough runway for them to deliver that message? It's certainly possible, but it's kind of got to start like right away here, really, really soon, showing, hey, we have a ceiling if you go out and get us that finishing piece.
Yeah, and that comes down to the conversation we had last segment, right? There's a certain group of players, and Quinn Hughes aside, like he's walking on hallowed ground here. We're not even talking about him. He's an elite player. He's, in my opinion, top two Hart Trophy voting this year. But you need your big dogs to step up and say, hey, we're ready for this moment. Give us the benefit of the doubt. We haven't had a good start to the season, but we are capable of achieving that standard that we were able to hit last year. But you got to do that now. To your point, you'll have less than 20 games to do so. And if you're a management team, usually it's the team has to show you whether they have, you know, whether you can instill more confidence in them. Bring in that piece, whether it's the Zadorov, Lindholm type. I think it's obviously the team, but you're also looking at your biggest stars right now. This kind of reminds me of a little bit of, remember when Jim Leitz in Dallas just kind of went out and kind of went after Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin a couple of years ago, saying, hey, you're making a lot of money, but we're not seeing much from you. You need to step up. And of course, with Dallas, they had a number of other players step up. Jason Robertson over the years. You go through the list of Logan
Hintz.
Hintz, Logan Stankoven, the back end, Miro Heiskanen. But that was also a shot of, hey, we're willing to invest in this team, but you got to do your job as well. And it feels like we're at that crossroads right now for with the Vancouver Canucks with 20 games, less than 20 games to the trade deadline. It's saying, all right, big dogs, start to, you know, do something here, because if Kiefer Sherwood has a career, that's great, but that's not taking you to the playoffs and winning your round. It's going to be down to the top guys. Quinn Hughes is doing his thing. If you're going to make a trade, you want to make sure that you have the utmost confidence in your stars to deliver. And that, as Patrick Galvin mentioned in his interview with Ian, he's not liking what he's seen right now.
And you know, you mentioned Quinn Hughes and just how he is the level he's hit this year. We've talked about it at length, I know, on this show, but it's another wrinkle to all this. And it kind of like, it must be very, very frustrating for management to feel like they're risking wasting this Quinn Hughes season. You know what I mean? Like, if Quinn Hughes is playing at this level and this team misses the playoffs or is uncompetitive in a first round exit against a really good team, and you had a guy who's having one of the best individual seasons a Canuck has ever had, that's devastating. And I think that's a big source of frustration for the fans as well, is that this guy is playing, like, how many players in Canucks history can you say have been at this level? Henrik Sedin when he won the Hart? Pavel Bure, maybe Marcus Naslund, but you're talking about just a handful of guys that have hit this level that Quinn Hughes has. To let that go to waste with no real Stanley Cup aspirations, if that's how this season plays out, on the one hand, I can understand why management would be very reluctant to make moves to spend assets to support this team. But I guess on the other hand, you're also looking at this and saying, well, how many, like, we got this player, we have to strike.
For sure you do, because that contract, as we know, it's not a lifetime contract for Quinn Hughes.
Nope.
He's going to make a lot of money on the next one. So every year you waste or you don't achieve what you want to achieve, it hurts you in the long term, right? That window gets a little smaller, at least, not to say that Quinn Hughes wouldn't be in Vancouver, but that number is going to be different. The window and the runway is going to be different. It does kind of remind me of Edmonton a couple of years ago, where it felt like you could have all world seasons from Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, but at some point in time, the rest of the team was just not there, whether it was the second line.
Yep.
Maybe Draisaitl wasn't. There was health involved as well. Vancouver seems to be there right now, but you have, in theory, those pieces.
Mm-hmm.
In theory, you have guys that you've believed in and have shown you that on over a span of a month in the NHL, they can be a player of the month. They can be an individual that has 100 points, both of those guys. So you've paid them, and there's got to be an element of frustration to say, this guy's stats are night and day with this team. When he's on the ice, they look like one of the best teams in the league. When he's off the ice, they look like well below, the worst. well below middle of the pack.
Really?
Right?
Oh yeah, not even close to middle of the pack.
For sure, but that's where you need your other guys, your other star players to drive play. And I understand that the techs are going to come in and say, hey, how about the rest of the back end? But there's got to be an element of frustration of you're getting this season from Quinn Hughes. All right, now, you know, on that road trip, they had a goals for of 1.8. Part of that's coaching, you can argue, but these are good NHL players. These are guys that are, you know, have been able to score at a very high level, but over a span of five games, they couldn't win the middle of the ice. They couldn't attack the neutral zone with speed, and that comes down to the players as well.
This question comes in. Do you see defenseman Elias Pettersson and or Cole McWard getting a chance to play if Soucy and Juulsen keep floundering? Not sure they'd be any worse. And, of course, referencing a couple of defensemen down in Abbotsford right now. I mean, I think you could throw Kirill Kudryavtsev in that mix as well, who's having a really productive first season in Abbotsford as a young defenseman who could potentially come up. It's a fascinating question because on the one hand, you think about it and, okay, we're having these consistent issues with our blue line. Can we look for different options down in Abbotsford, especially if we're not finding the impact options on the trade market that we want? So I wouldn't rule it out. I know the organization is high on both guys, especially Cole McWard, who they signed out of NCAA. I wouldn't rule it out at all, but I also think back, remember when this management team took over? One of the first things they did was send Nils Höglander down to Abbotsford. And that wasn't because, or sorry, I shouldn't say when they took over, but it was in the Bruce Boudreau, the second Bruce Boudreau season, right? And they sent Nils Höglander down to Abbotsford. And part of that was, yes, he needs to work on his game, but they also didn't want him in a chaotic situation with the Canucks, right? They want, like, as it was turning into in that moment where they weren't playing the right way, they didn't want him in that situation. And so I wonder, yeah, it's great to look at, okay, do we give Elias Pettersson or Cole McWard a chance? And maybe they do. But I also wonder if you want to shelter those young players, those young defensemen that you're counting on for the future a little bit and just keep, hey, they've got a good thing going in Abbotsford, keep them there, and we'll try to work with the veterans up here to figure it out.
Yeah, let them marinate, and that's the way that Alvin and Rutherford have done business going back to their days at Wilkes-Barre Scranton, too, with the AHL affiliate in Pittsburgh, where, you know, guys like Rust and Sherry, they came up when they were ready, you know, go through the list. Even the fringe guys that, you know, we barely remember, guys like Tom Kunackle, right? Like, those guys are playoff performers, but they grinded in the AHL, and it took them time to get to that level. Now, also, I think it's worth a question of, are you really upgrading? As much as I like those players, to me, at best, that's a lateral move.
I also wonder if it would almost be just more of a message-sending thing. But then are you going to bring a player into a non-ideal situation just to send a message? And how many messages can you send?
Well, you already did
one. Haven't we sent so many messages here?
Briezois coming in and Brännström going down, I thought that sent a message. Hey, you're an NHL defenseman, but if you don't keep it up, we're sending you down. That's exactly what happened, right? Cole McWard, Kudryavtsev, go through the list of players that you mentioned. If we're actually talking about this back end getting better, I don't think that is the choice to make this season. It's external.
Yeah.
Externally, can you bring in a top three? Because if you bring in Cole McWard, I like Cole McWard. I think he's, you know, in the long term, he's an option for this team. But does that really raise your floor that much, right? Desharnais struggling in a lot of ways, but this is a player that still brings physicality. There's certain deficiencies in his game, but he's a penalty killer. Cole McWard's not a perfect player either. He's going to be better at moving the puck up the ice, but there's other elements that he doesn't provide. Is there somebody that you can have an upgrade on that's a number three or four defenseman externally? I think this team needs a bigger shakeup than that on the back end, and that's not a disrespect to the young guys in Abbotsford, but we've kind of seen the musical chairs when it comes to, you know, shifting bodies out and shifting bodies in from the AHL on the back end. I think there's a pretty significant upgrade needed.
And I can buy it on a short-term basis of, because look, you're not raising this team's ceiling by calling up Cole McWard or Elias Pettersson from the AHL, right? But the argument would be, can we just give ourselves, yes, it's a lateral move, but just a little bit of a different mix, maybe a little bit of a different skill set, try something fresh here to kind of give us any little extra boost we can while we sort it out with an external move. I think that would be the argument. Not that you're, you know, quote unquote, solving your issues by bringing one of those guys up, but just that the mix you have has not been working for over 40 games now, and you need to do something to switch it up a little bit. Again, it's kind of, like do it or don't do it, whatever. I don't think it's going to have that big of an impact on the season. And, you know, we get texts in as well about, well, is Tom Volander going to be able to, you know, if he leaves college after this year, joins the team just before the playoffs or going into the playoffs, can he step into a top four puck moving role for them? I think people underestimate how hard it is to play big minutes at the NHL level. Yes, guys have done it in the past, and you know, Charlie McAvoy and Cale Makar. You can't rely on somebody like that coming in and transforming your top four. It's just such a big jump from college hockey to the NHL.
The speed, the size, the speed of the game, gap control for a defenseman especially. Yep. When we talk about forwards, of course, it's getting inside. You know, playing the perimeter game is not going to cut it in the NHL. But for a defenseman, you don't have that time. Those forechecks come real hard, real quick. And then also body position in the middle of the ice. Those are things that take time at the NHL level. You got a season in the AHL, and Volander's a first-round pick for a reason. They believe in him. He's a good player. But look at some of the young defensemen that we're seeing, whether it's a David Juracek, right?
Yeah.
It's not an immediate jump to the NHL, and you're a home run, you know, and you're going to succeed right off the bat. So McWard, maybe he gives you an option. Maybe he gives you a lateral move at the very least, but it is something that it feels like with this back end, you need an upgrade on that top four, right? We're talking about that left-hand side seems pretty locked in. They like Forbert. Carson Soucy needs to play better, but he's still a defenseman on this team. He's not getting bumped out of the lineup. Quinn Hughes, we know there is... Well, let's not even... He's healthy. He's playing probably half the game.
I don't think... They're talking about a lot of different things, I think,
Not
that.
But the right-hand side, yeah, you need to upgrade.
Yeah.
And McWard might give you something for a couple of games, but we've seen guys from the AHL come up and... Mm-hmm. You have that adrenaline early on, Jamie, and then what happens? The real thing about being a pro at the NHL level is doing it game in, game out. And that's what they need.
Yeah, not just in the first week of a call-up. All right, Randeep, this was awesome, man. Really appreciate it. Have a fantastic trip to Canmore. Get warm. Stay toasty. You'll do fine. You'll be all right. Enjoy Hockey Day in Canada. It should be a lot of fun. Thank you to everyone for texting in. Really appreciate it. Very enjoyable show today, I have to say, for myself. Not that I enjoy when they lose like that. I don't want to... No, but it adds a level of spice that's always fun sometimes. So thanks to everyone for participating. I'll be back tomorrow. Landon Ferraro, he'll talk me down a little bit from the crisis point that I was at today. He'll be the voice of reason. Yeah, Landon will be the voice of reason on the show tomorrow. He'll join me for another hour as well here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.